The prime goal of government is to protect the minority of the opulent from the majority. And in order to do that, you've got to fragment the majority so they really can't get together and do very much. And you have to concentrate power in the wealth of the nation.
Hi, I'm Michael Malice, and let that be your welcome. I'm very excited to have a somewhat reclusive guest, Dr. Hans Hermann Hoppe, author of Democracy, the God That Failed, head of the PFS, Murray Rothbard's protege. I saw you speak at Mises in New York. It was a great talk. It was also very funny, and it was great to see that sense of humor come out of you, because I think you have this reputation of being very imposing and intimidating. Is that something that you cultivate?
No. I think I'm a Northern German person, and Northern Germans are like that. So they do have a dry humor, but are considered by other people to be reclusive and not that sociable as people from the South are, or as Italians are, or even as people in Southern Germany are. Northern Germans are a special brand of people, I would say.
Now, you're aware that there's all these memes about you on the internet now?
Yes, I'm aware of it. I'm sure not aware of all of them, but eventually people sent me some.
So a lot of them came from the New York Troll Board. We kind of started a lot of this stuff. And one of the big questions people have is, in your book you discussed that in a free libertarian society, communists would have to be physically removed, right? This became a meme. The question everyone has is, when you say physically removed, do you mean they will be physically distant, or that they will be physically picked up and pushed away?
They will be physically distant. I believe what has happened in all Western societies is that people hesitated too long to host people in their midst, opposed all of the standards that apply to all other people, and there was too much tolerance towards them. They should have been pushed out by various measures such as ostracism, making fun of them, also neighbors coming together and complaining jointly about this to make their life uncomfortable, and they will have to go to places where people like them assemble and where they would feel better about themselves and about their neighbors. But the fact that we didn't do this led to a situation where we bred more and more evil characters.
Yeah.
And once a number reaches a certain size, then it becomes almost impossible to get rid of them.
So in that vein, what do you think of recent attempts by social media to ostracize and kind of ban people like Alex Jones, Gavin McInnes, a friend of mine? Is that not in effect what you're advocating?
Yes, I think we should do exactly the reverse. That is, discriminating them in the same way as they discriminate against us, and lead our separate lives, but do not give in to their demands, separating us from them, and let them separate themselves from us.
Michael Malice here. Today's episode is sponsored by HeshiSocks.com, HeshiSocks.com, the most comfortable kick-ass fashion socks for work or play. They gave me a pair of these socks. I tried them on. I've got a drawer full of socks at home, and these are my house socks because they're so soft. They're like wearing pillows on your feet. They're awesome. I sleep in them. Regular socks are thin, provide no protection, and cause your feet to hurt, and they're overpriced to like $30. Heshi socks cut out the middleman, so these are high quality, affordable socks that have arch support like athletic socks, with high-end Pima cotton, so it's highly breathable and absorbable if your feet sweat, but it's antimicrobial, so the feet don't smell. You got different styles. You got the fancy stuff that I like. You got the basic stuff you can wear with dress shoes or sneakers. Here's how it works. If you use promo code WELCOME100 on HeshiSocks.com, you get 30% off. So go to HeshiSocks.com, WELCOME30, and you get 30% off. You are going to love these socks.
The basis of libertarianism, in my view, and I'm sure in your view, is peace. Peaceful cooperation between people. What do you think, but at the same time, you have been attacked viciously on the internet. Do you pay attention to these attacks, and what do you think of them?
No, I have stopped paying attention to that maybe 20 years ago. At the beginning, of course, you are sort of shocked about this. Do they know me? Why are they saying these things about me? And at the beginning, I did sometimes reply to things that people sent me and defended myself. And I have realized there is absolutely no purpose to it. And in the meantime, I never reply to any of these attacks against me.
What was it like? Tell me the time when you first met Murray Rothbard.
I met him first time in 1985. I had a grant, a very nice grant from the German National Science Foundation that allowed me to do for 5 years whatever I wanted to do. And it became clear to me that with my views, a German university professor position was unattainable. The last year of that grant, I decided you must go to the United States, and then the question was, where will you go? And at that time, there was no doubt in my mind that the person that I wanted to meet the most of all was Murray Rothbard. Then I had a little correspondence with him, at that time still slow mail, and he was enthused about the idea, also promised to offer some additional help, then I moved to New York City, or rather to Brooklyn.
We're in Brooklyn. I'm in Brooklyn.
I must think about what that is called. Oxford Street. I think that is.
Okay, South Oxford by Atlantic Center. Yeah. Oh wow. Yeah, so that's a train stop away from me.
I think that is now a very hip neighborhood.
Yes, it is. You're a hipster. You're a trendsetter.
At the time when I moved there, it was not very hip, okay. I would say. I moved into a house that was under rent control restrictions. The two lower floors were owned by a gay couple, and they had to, and the upper floors were rented to people at rent control prices. Those were Puerto Rican welfare recipients. They rented the place to me because it was clear that I would not stay, and they wanted to be able to return after a year in England to their place. So it was easy to get rid of me, yeah, as a renter, whereas it was almost impossible to get rid of the rent control protected people. And the funny thing then was these Puerto Ricans, was mother, daughter, and some walk-in lover or something like this, whenever they received their welfare check, then they got loaded, fell down the stairs, screamed at the top of their lungs, and when I complained about that to them, then they said, go back to England, go back to England, because the two owners of the place had gone for a grant to, yeah, England for a year, and I said, go back to Puerto Rico, go back to Puerto Rico. They were so drunk at times that they fell on the street, on the stairs to our apartment, but there was absolutely nothing that you could do. I said, I called the police. I said, oh, the police is my cousin.
Okay, yeah.
So there was absolutely nothing that we could do about that. And in the meantime, I think the house has become a hip house, so they must have gotten rid of these people somehow.
And they're surely wealthy now.
Yeah. But that was a, also they broke into my car just after the second day of living in that place. Life was in general difficult because I had two small kids, and small kids in New York City, that is not the most ideal situation. And then I met Murray and was, of course, shocked to see how that university, Brooklyn Polytechnic, it was called. In the meantime, it has changed the names several times. I think it's now part of NYU,
okay.
The engineering school of NYU. I had thought that Murray would live in comfortable, upper-middle-class type circumstances, and was astonished to see that he had an office without any windows, that he had to share his office with another professor, both full professors. In Germany, assistants had better rooms, and full professors had large offices with a special room for the secretary to receive you into the larger premises of the professors. So given that I thought that Murray was a famous man, that was like a shock to see how he was treated there.
How did you find out that Murray passed away?
I think Lou called me. Murray had gone for the winter break to Manhattan, and then it was supposed to come back within the next two or three days to start teaching again in Vegas. And then Lou called me and said, Murray is dead. He went with his wife, I think, to an appointment of an eye doctor, and all of a sudden he fell off his chair and was dead. That was it. This came as an unexpected shock. On the other hand, of course, I knew that Murray was not the most healthy of people. He didn't like doctors. I think Lou Rockwell also doesn't like doctors. And he did not do any type of exercise. When we went out to lunch together in Vegas, there was only one choice that he allowed to be made. That was the closest place, just across the street. And if I suggested, Murray, why don't we go to 100 meters or 200 meters? There's a much nicer place.
Yeah, it's New York. You can walk.
No, I don't. He didn't want to do that. In New York, he also did not take the subway because he was afraid of underground things. So he took the bus to Brooklyn. And then at some point, they even discontinued the direct bus service to Brooklyn. So he had to go first to Brooklyn, change the bus to finally get to his university.
Did Murray ever talk to you about Ayn Rand and his thoughts on her?
No, yeah, he admitted that he had belonged to the wider Ayn Rand circle for a while. With his some other people who belonged to his circle, Bastiat, such as Ralph Raico and Ronald Hamowy, there might have been a few others. They were at first quite excited about the existence of Rand and her writings and so forth, and realized, however, very quickly that there was some cultish element in what they did, that they had strict opinions on almost anything, ranging from economics to philosophy, but also then to aesthetics, music preferences, and so forth, where Murray's attitude was, yes, there exist clear, true, and false judgments in some areas, but in others, you cannot really say, is Mozart really better composer than Beethoven, or Beethoven a better composer than Rachmaninoff? There is no possibility that you can make statements that you can show to be true, rather than expressing your preferences for tastes. And in addition, I think that is, of course, a well-known anecdote, true anecdote, that Rand was an ardent atheist.
Yes.
And insisted that all of her followers would be like that as well. And it turned out that Murray's wife was a Presbyterian. And, of course, now he had to justify the fact that he was married with somebody who was an irrational person, because only irrational person would believe in religion. And that, of course, he refused to do anything like this.
Do you consider yourself an atheist?
No, I consider myself an agnostic. I think that is just a question that we cannot answer. And I leave it at that, but express sympathy for religion. I know that religions fulfill a very important role. As a term, religion, meaning of the term religion is to bind people together. And of course, you want to have a certain trust when you deal with other people, and a common religion is, of course, one of these elements that creates this trust. There are, of course, important differences of different religions, and of course every religion has dozens of different interpretations, and you can certainly find interpretations that seem somehow libertarian or compatible with libertarianism. On Sunday, tomorrow, I will speak about just the Ten Commandments. And if you read the Ten Commandments, not all of the precepts there would be agreed by libertarians, but the Ten Commandments do not say anything about what the appropriate punishment is for this. So, for instance, you should not give false witness of your neighbors. It would be libel law. Some people would say that is not a crime, that
right.
Should not be punished by physical punishment. But on the other hand, you can certainly say it should be punished by means below the level of physical violence, because people who do say wrong things, bad things about their neighbor, which are clearly wrong, deserve some sort of punishment. So in this sense, if you distinguish between the different commandments, between those that should be punished physically and those that should be punished below the threshold of physical punishment, then the Ten Commandments are perfectly compatible with libertarian views. And that means also that we can appeal to a Catholic audience, not just to libertarians, who are already hardcore libertarians, but almost everybody would somehow have some sympathy for the Ten Commandments, would hesitate to say, no,
right,
I'm against the Ten Commandments. I think breaking the Ten Commandments is no big deal whatsoever. So our audience is actually an audience of all people, instead of just a narrow group.
Michael Malice here. I want to tell you guys about BetDSI.com. Football season started. Maybe you're going to Vegas. You want to bet on some things while you're there. Maybe if you want to hot in a plane, go to BetDSI.com. They've been around since 1998. Totally reputable, an A-plus rated sports book, and offers odds on all major sports with a focus on the NFL. Don't like the NFL? Bet on reality TV, bet on award shows, pretty much everything. BetDSI.com has something for you to bet on. It's a way to watch the game and have more fun while doing it. They also have got a great app, so you don't want to be in front of your computer, you're on your phone watching the game. Easy. If you use promo code WELCOME100 at BetDSI.com, you get 100% free money. Who doesn't like free money? So go betdsi.com, promo code welcome100. You play, you bet, you win. You're welcome.
I didn't realize you earlier mentioned having two small kids. What's Hans Hermann Hoppe like as a dad?
I think I was a moderately good dad. My kids grew up in the United States. And of course, I was not a good dad in the sense that I attended all these social gatherings that take place in American schools.
Right.
The dances and the football games and the basketball games, all of that was somewhat strange to me. So I showed up there a few times, but what you see on TV, what American parents do with their kids, that's freaking out at the basketball game, so I could not do that. That is against my nature. And the second complaint I have about myself, second sin I committed, I concentrated very heavily on my work. And of course, in a foreign country, you have to struggle a little bit more than if you are at home. So, yes, I might have spent a little bit more time with my kids. And the third mistake I made was I did not put enough pressure on my kids to learn German. They do speak German, but not perfectly. They make grammatical errors, their vocabulary is somewhat limited. So this is what I regret, that I have not pushed them more in that direction. But on their own, they make an effort now to improve their German, because we always went to Europe during the summer breaks. My kids always came with me. And they continue to do this up to this day, and of course pick up German along the way.
What of your accomplishments are you proudest of?
I would say the argumentation ethics, a new foundation of libertarian ethic. I know that it is somewhat disputed in among circles, but I have the feeling that it is gradually increasing the number of people to see that has been some breakthrough. There might be teeny corrections that can be made, but I would say that is the most important one. In terms of success, it was, of course, my book on democracy.
Yes.
That made me well known in a way.
One of the things that I thought fascinating about your history, and I quote this in my forthcoming book, you gave a talk after Pat Buchanan basically turned his back on Murray, and you basically called his program National Socialism.
Yeah, it was a conference, and there was, I think Pat Buchanan was not even in the audience, but Sam Francis. And Sam Francis was closely associated Pat Buchanan. And he gave a speech, and the speech was emphasizing, yes, we have to keep all the welfare state programs, Medicaid and Medicare and whatever that is, and we should engage in protectionist measures. And I replied to this and explained that if you want to have a return to normalcy, which Pat Buchanan always wants to have, then you cannot possibly support all these welfare state measures because they breed these types of behaviors. What I realized then, that led in a way to the breakdown of the John Randolph Club that existed at that time. I mean, Murray died then shortly afterwards, and he had been one of the major figures there. And he being dead, and the conservative wing of the Randolph Club being upset about me having said this, led ultimately to the discontinuation of the alliance that existed between the conservatives and the libertarians. I forgot something, your question?
I'm just saying you said it was National Socialism in San Francisco there.
Yes, because what the program amounted to was indeed National Socialism. I said in the speech that upset them that that is, of course, not National Socialism like with anti-Semitism and all the rest of it, but the term best describing what their program was National Socialism. And I still think that that is a correct description. I realize that that National Socialism is an enormously popular program. If it comes to a competition between international socialists sharing with the world as a whole or national socialism, almost everyone everywhere chooses national socialism. And it is not an incorrect description to say that social democrats are the international oriented group and the conservative parties are parties that also want socialism, maybe a little bit less redistribution, but only for a smaller group of people. Even now, the central dividing line in most European countries is between people who want to restrict immigration, keep it in the nation, and the left parties, but including now also what was formerly a conservative party, the Christian Democratic Union in Germany, with Mrs. Merkel, who chooses the internationalist socialist position. And in Merkel's case, interestingly enough, there is even some sort of continuity in her political life, because she grew up in East Germany. Her father was a priest who emigrated from the West to the East.
Oh, wow.
He was always called the Red so-and-so. I don't know what his last name was. And she grew up in a Christian socialist type family. Her father was tolerated by the commies, even though most priests had difficulties there, and made it possible that their daughter could study whatever she wanted, wherever she wanted, which in Eastern European countries, communist countries, was rarely the case. Most people were simply assigned, and people who had a bourgeois background were frequently even excluded from studying at all, and had to do whatever they were assigned to do. So she had a very smooth career and was the secretary of propaganda of the youth organization of the Socialist Unity Party, the leading party there. And I think she then continued this type of training and displays it at the current moment as
You did the foreword for the book Radical Coup, and you said that his views in many ways align with your own. I just saw the postcards out there. One of the things he talks about in the book is degeneracy, and this is a word that's very used very often in the right. I've never heard a good definition of what degeneracy means.
Now, yeah, I would define it as those types of behaviors that are bred by the fact that they receive continuous support from the state and do not have to apply to the standard norms that are adhered to by all people who earn their own living.
Okay, so these are behaviors that in a free society would die out of their own because...
They would die out. I think that many of these lefties can lead their undisciplined life only because no punishment follows.
Right.
They would simply not make any money and would have to be desperately poor. Many of them, of course, live off their parents' money, which I think would be a mistake on the part of the parents.
Yes.
It comes back to the initial point where I said, yes, sometimes even if they are your relatives, you have to break with them if they continue to misbehave but insist and believe that they are entitled to lifelong support
right.
from their parents. And I guess too many parents are too tolerant when it comes to this type of behavior.
I'm going to ask one critical one. The big attack everyone has against you, and I want to hear your answer, is that you're racist, right? Does that term, do you think, has any meaning nowadays?
I think it has lost any meaning whatsoever. If racism is simply the statement that you think there exist different races, then of course I'm a racist. But nothing follows from that. Yes, of course. Everybody, they just have to open their eyes and then they see there are black people, there are Chinese people, and then there are people like you and me. So you would confuse little children if you would say that doesn't exist. To say, oh, but isn't he black? Isn't he white? Isn't he something in between? So in this sense, it is no different than saying there exist people who belong to the upper class and people belong to the lower class and this is a middle class person. To distinguish between there are females and there are males. I mean, you cannot conduct any type of research, or you cannot even orient yourself in the world as it is if you do not notice these types of things, because different groups also regularly behave in different ways. Women act differently than men in many situations. Blacks act differently in many situations from whites. If you don't, if you ignore these differences, you will run into more problems than if you are aware of them.
You had a big problem when you were teaching at UNLV with, you had a comment which was, can you tell that story and how you basically were, they tried to drive you out of your job?
I described the concept of time preference. How willing or unwilling you are to delay gratification, how long or short your planning horizon is.
Right. No worries. We're almost done. Go ahead.
So what?
Talking about prime preference when you were teaching.
So, and then I give examples. And I said, little children have very high time preference. They cannot wait. If you give them a dollar and say, I'll give you another dollar tomorrow if you don't spend it today, they have tremendous difficulties doing that because they want a lollipop.
But did you know that we had a weekly event in New York called High Time Preference Hopper Hour instead of Happy Hour? Did you know that? Okay.
Yeah, I've heard about it.
Yeah.
Another example was, that muggers and rapists have also high time preference. Normal people, when they want something, they have to work at least a day and earn some money, and then they can buy it. A mugger just takes it without waiting. Normal people, when they are interested in a girl, they take her out and take her to the movie, and then they talk and think that it's the most amazing thing that you are telling me. And then it takes a long time before anything happens. If you don't have this type of patience, then, of course, these violent acts occur. Then I also said, and I guess homosexuals also have a higher time preference, because especially if they don't have kids, and most of them don't, then their planning horizon is almost necessarily shorter. Right. Life ends with them. And that was it. And then a homosexual student complained about it, went to the affirmative action commissar. I don't know what it is, somebody working for human resources, but right. They always refer to them as the affirmative action commissar, who happened to be a former Catholic priest who had turned into a homosexual activist. And
was that degenerate?
And this guy had gone to all student clubs. He said, I'm here now, I'm here for you now.
Okay.
If there's anything ever said by anybody, come to me. And then some sort of trial started.
Oh, gosh.
I was supposed to apologize. I said, no way.
But what was your reaction when they confronted you about this statement?
He said, I should. He called me at home and said, as a complaint, we have to meet. Come to my office. I told him, no, you come to my office. Then he wanted to tell me what I'm supposed to say. And I said, you are not a professor. You are not an economist. I would not take anything back. The only thing that I agreed to was that I would explain what the difference is between averages and individuals.
Okay.
So then I gave another lecture and said, okay, I'll explain the difference between averages and individual behavior, and I use the example, Italians eat more spaghetti and Germans eat more potatoes. That is not true for every German and every Italian. There are some Italians that eat more potatoes and some Germans eat spaghettis. And that was it. Then that was considered to be making a joke out of the whole complaint.
Okay.
And then the affirmative action commissar went to the university administration. Then some committees were formed who were supposed to look into this scandalous event. And there were hearings after hearing. I was supposed to prove this sort of thing. I said, I don't have to prove anything. If you do, that is plausible. I can give you some citations of this. But this is obviously an empirical statement.
Yes.
It is open to research. And if you don't like it, I have just offered a plausible hypothesis, but not more. And I'm allowed to do state plausible hypotheses. In the end, after the procedures was almost a year, the university then threatened me that I would not get any raises in several years. First, they tried to force me not to say anything about the procedures that were initiated against me, shut my mouth. And when it came to that point, then I gave that up and made it public. Then the public turned against the university and was very supportive. I had many lawyers on my side because most of my students became lawyers.
Oh.
So I sometimes had six lawyers.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And even the, interestingly, even the Civil Liberty Union, which is some leftist outfit, they felt that somehow in order to prevail or to maintain their image as being really concerned, but even they came to my side.
Oh, wow.
Came to my side. So ultimately, the university gave in. I was cleared of of all charges. And I had thinking about suing them, but the lawyers told me that takes forever. You will probably win in the end, but that might be five, six years.
Yeah. What was your emotional state during this whole process?
Oh, it was terrible. I was on. I drugged myself up with Valium and.
Much stress?
Oh, I was under extreme stress. Yeah. So I consider that to be a lost year in my life. I was a wreck during this. The reward was, in the end, some American organization, maybe FIRE or so, they always give a prize for the biggest scandal that took place at universities. And unfortunately, I only won the second prize.
Silver's pretty good.
But nonetheless, I was quite happy that was in the newspapers and also won the second prize.
And to have the vindication is got to be gratifying.
Yeah.
So we got the last two very quick questions, okay? What is Hans Hermann Hoppe's favorite joke?
Oh, I tell you, an East Block joke. So Erich Honecker, was chief of the East German regime, goes to the shipping wharf, and he ships leaving, and asked first ship, "What are you shipping away?" We sent them some rubber tires to Mozambique. And what do you bring back from Mozambique? Oh, we bring back bananas. Then next ship, we are going to Cuba. What do you take to Cuba? Oh, we take bicycles. We deliver bicycles in Cuba. And what do you bring back? Oh, sugar cane we bring back. And it goes to a third boat. I said, what do you do? Yeah, we will go to Russia. But will you take there? All pharmaceuticals we will take there. And what do you, will you bring back? Oh, but how do you come back? And then they say, oh, just as always when we go to the Soviet Union, by train.
Last question, it's a yes or no question. Is a hot dog a sandwich? Is a hot dog a sandwich?
How would hot dog
you, yeah, would you class?
No, hot dog is
thank you. Okay. Thank you, Hans Hermann Hoppe, for this interview. I'll see you all next week. You are welcome.